Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and the six eyes is not a fucking technique, Coulson. And with me, I have...
Days without nonsense happening in the world. Still zero.
And...
Oh, thank God this book sequestered us again with a bunch of good shit. And also a bunch of stuff that, like, what the hell's that? Or, I think maybe this one, or, wait, that air on UPN way back?
That's a problem. Ah, Bobots. You were a company.
Yes.
In other words, it's a certified discotheque classic.
I don't know, but I got a feeling the next license they might miss obscure shit they... obscure animated show from the late 90s and licenses. I don't know why I brought this one. This show popped in my head. Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century. Or it's like...
Oh, right. That is that. A thing.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that was on UPN. I mean, remember
the television landscape is very strange.
Yeah.
Yep. Sure was.
Yeah.
That reminds me, one of these days I actually have to go to Otakon. Seems pretty fun.
Yeah, sounds like a fun time. If only we had the money for it, but maybe in another life.
Yeah, or maybe someone, I don't know, fund us money. Please fund us money.
Robert X.
We will gladly take money. We will gladly take your money for no reason at all.
Yes, please. Please give us cash, because we need to live.
Yes, we will take cash, check, cashier's check, direct deposits, unmarked bills and briefcases, or Pokemon cards, because those apparently are worth more than money nowadays.
Yeah! Damn. Also, not gonna lie, I didn't even know that Sentai lost the license to Big O.
Yeah, same here. Oh, they lost license? I thought, okay.
Literally, I was sitting here like, wait, that came out on Blu-ray a while ago. I have it. I was like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
The industry is wild.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for more on that later in the week. Maybe.
Yeah, I literally just pulled out a drawer right now. I'm looking at it. Big O Sentai.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can be convinced to double dip.
Yeah, but folks, as you know, this ain't that podcast. That's outstanding.
Again, later in the week, hopefully, maybe if I can get it out on time, which I've had trouble to do because I'm a very busy, busy work boy.
Aren't we all? Also, since I don't know if it's going to come up on the other podcast and I didn't have it listed as a proper topic here, that new MGK song, it's not good.
Hot fucking trash is what it is.
I didn't know it. I didn't know what happened. I listened to it, and I don't want to listen to it.
Let me put it this.
Just think.
I heard a few seconds, and I was like, the fuck is this?
Of the three songs, there have been three songs this guy has put out. Of the three songs, the worst one has neither Wiz Khalifa nor Fred Durst. That's impressive.
This is this might very well be the single worst thing to ever be affiliated with Jujutsu Kaisen in the history of its existence. And that's saying a lot, because have you seen the animation studio that produces its adaptation?
They want to kill the studio. I've seen what happens at the end of season two. There's just a lot of subtext going on there. In fact, it's not even subtext. It's just plain text.
Also, I'm pretty sure he's not even doing, like, Megami's hand sign thing for summoning the Shadow Dogs correctly. Like, I only think Jujutsu Kaisen is okay on average, and even I'm pretty sure he's getting this shit wrong.
Probably don't feel bad for the JJK fans, even though some of y'all were kind of, well, annoying as fuck in the show. I mean, I like the show. I mean, I like season one, season two, season three, so far. Okay. But, yeah.
There is truly no fan base that is not annoying. Except maybe the Azumanga Daioh fan base. They're pretty chill.
Hey. Anyway, I'm keeping a timer on hand for a Megan Thee Stallion diss track against this guy any day now. But let's get back on topic, because this is Decibel Boost. Here we are, episode 442. Has everyone's week been going okay? Any interesting tales to tell?
No, it's been a rough week. Turns out after you fall on your legs and knees and tailbone and your fists and wrists, turns out working 5 days afterwards and one more day along with that is not good for you. I've been walking like a hobbled mess, like Torgo in Manos the Hands of Fate.
Wow. Sounds bad.
Yeah, those of you who have seen the Mystery Science Theater 3000 episode about Manos the Hands of Fate, you'll know exactly what I mean. The rest of you, go watch that, like, right now. Just watch it. It's peak comedy. But, yeah, I am slowly getting better. I have the ability to bend my legs again, which I didn't have for a while. Like, I had a hard fall. Also, I'm pretty sure something's wrong with my pinky finger on the hand I fell on, because I'm feeling like a shift in one of the bones that shouldn't be there. I don't think it's broken, but it doesn't feel intact. Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but I'm also seeing like a weird curvature in the digits, which wasn't there before. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Anything fun? I bought a VCR at Goodwill for $10. It's a high quality unit and it works. So, yay! I bought more cheap movies over the weekend at Second and Charles. I bought an original theatrical cut DVD from 1997 of Terminator 2, Judgment Day, with the actual theatrical mix. It's the only one that has it. And yeah, this might actually be the greatest movie ever made. Like, hands down, bar none. Like, the greatest movie ever made.
I need to rewatch that movie at some point.
You should. It's very good. Just don't buy the 4K version. It is hot garbage.
I've heard many a thing about James Cameron's 4K upgrades.
He loves waxy models that may or may not be AI upscales.
Oh no.
They're definitely AI upscales, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh boy.
God damn it, Jim. You had one job.
Does everybody like and respect you fucks with AI now? Shit.
Ugh. This has been a thing for many, many years with upscaling technology. And on that note, to all the TV manufacturers out there, God, I'm stumbling over my words, please put regular-ass composite input jacks on your TVs. I had to buy a composite to HDMI adapter for this VCR I got just to watch some of these movies I have laying around. This thing cost me $40. Granted, it worked, but it was still $40.
Yeah, the people who make those conversion box things are doing the Lord's work. I've owned more than a few in my day for various reasons.
Yeah. Fortunately, this one is a much higher build quality and not those crappy $10 ones you'd find in, like, bargain bins at tech shops everywhere.
Fair enough. Mark, what about you?
Well, let's see. My week has been nothing special, to be honest. I will say work is whatever, but lately I've had a few days off, which I like, you're like, oh hey, get some days off, but then you realize that might affect your pay, and paying things, and the fact that, well, yeah, it's kind of conundrum. It's like, on one hand, you get some time off, on the other hand, you need money for shit, and this only job that, well, at least you work during the day and then go home to rest. I can't find a job like that again. her working 9 to 5 is not that great, or anything that lasts between eight hours is not great, or at least tiring.
Yeah, 9 to 5s are kind of lame. Someone should write a song about that someday.
Someone should. I mean, other than that, like I said, the one highlight. I talked about with this Kotech thing, and I didn't even know they would do the thing until somebody mentioned it. They're like, "Oh, sweet! I should watch that." And then I speak, they got Toradora. I should probably buy that. Not gonna buy it again. Well, buy it now since I didn't do it the first time. Whenever I get money. Well, might as well pick a cold one.
Yeah. as for me, I watched a couple movies. I finally caught up with the Spider-Man movies. I saw No Way Home and Brand New Day. No Way Home is alright. Most of the stuff I like about it is mainly my fond nostalgia for the Tobey Maguire era. The worst part about the movie is forcing me to acknowledge Andrew Garfield's existence again. But, I mean, the movie was okay. And as for Brand New Day, that was actually surprisingly pretty solid. Easily the best of the Tom Holland run so far. Don't really get why the Hulk was there, though. Kind of seems like they just sort of shoved him in because they needed to put him in something. But, you know, pretty good movie.
I think it's because they would do a Hulk movie, except Universal said, fuck no, that's our shit.
Oh, yeah, we're still dealing with that. Copyright
shit. Strange. Yeah. Isn't it lovely?
Yeah.
But aside from that, here's a fun little personal story that happened to me the other day. So, fun fact about this house that I'm living in. Apparently, for the longest time, the shower head in the bathroom was kind of pissing out water. Like, at the point where the shower head actually screws into the tubing and such. And just, you know, on a whim, I was like, you know what? I'm sick of this bullshit. I'm gonna look up a bunch of YouTube videos and then see what the fuck is going on with this thing. Now, in normal circumstances, this might sound like a very ill-advised idea. Especially since I'm the last person you would ever ask to do any sort of a DIY repairs. But I do want to stress for the record, I succeeded. It took a while, though. Because, like, these parts were really, like, once you got everything unscrewed and you were looking at the piping, it was all very tightly wedged together. So it took a lot of elbow grease just to pry these components apart from each other. But I did. And then eventually discovered that the culprit was this gash in the tube that threads onto, you know, the actual, like, the spout, as it were. I'm pretty sure I'm not using these terms correctly, but the point is, there was a gash where the water was leaking out, so I had to, like, snip that part out and then, you know, re-thread everything back together, assemble everything again, and then, when I went to go take a shower, lo and behold, no pissing out. So, I consider that a personal victory. When DIY repairs go right and you don't end up with a hospital bill.
It's a miracle!
Or a Florida Man headline.
Florida Man doesn't die from doing DIY shit.
Are you kidding me? That doesn't get news. I need to do something with an alligator. Throw it through. No, wait. Some guy already threw it through a Wendy's. Raccoon through. No, they probably already did that too. Well, I'm going to the drawing board on this. But. Enough of my personal stuff. I believe that should cover all the formalities just about. So, let's move on to the usual weekly business, starting, of course, with a new song discussion for the past week. As always, there will be a playlist down in the description, so you can follow along with us, pick up some new tunes for your playlists, mark your calendars for new albums, all that fun stuff. So, what better way to start off this particular episode than trying to blow out someone's speakers? So, the band Frontierer have announced that they're releasing a new album October 23rd, titled Ultraviolet Parasite. And so, to coincide with the announcement, we have the title track released here. So, In case it's, I feel like it's probably been a while since I've named dropped this band here. Frontier is one of those bands whose music very much does one thing and one thing only, and that is being very blaringly loud and discordant. The mix is very, very bass heavy with the kicks of the drums and the detuned guitar chords booming outwards, especially mixed in with a lot of the vocalist very howling, screeching performances. The closest thing you get to any sort of breaks is from the lead work from the guitars, which is mainly just like, you know, pinch harmonics, dive bombs, lots of squealing distortions and various things. I will say, between the mixing and the particular drum patterns at play here, this song has a minuscule bit more clarity than usual, but maybe that's just my weird biased ass as someone who generally likes this band's music, so of course I would notice something like that, whereas others would be like, it just sounds like a blaring wall. But I like blaring walls, so color me interested.
I apologize, Scotland. I was unfamiliar with your game. This hits pretty hard as a frantic burst of energy and aggression. It's the answer to, what if The Walk by Periphery was combined with Dillinger and The Chariot? And that's a great combination of artistry to me. And as one hearted YouTube comment so adequately put, hate AI slop, listen to music that cannot have come from anything other than a human. And this is human as fuck, and I can respect that.
Absolutely beautiful. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. Look at that. It's a name that we have not heard in quite some time. Apparently, this is a new track from SOBXRBE.
Yeah, that's a name we heard in a long while. And in case you're wondering, who were they? Yeah, remember the Black Panther soundtrack? Remember that one track, Paramedic, by them? Yeah, that was them. And of course they blew up, and then they stopped. Or they just were tired of just, I don't know, just not do shit anymore. But yeah, it's been a long while since we heard something from them, and they have a single, I guess it's comeback single. It's titled 10 Summers. And I gotta say, it's like still taking the sound. All I think now is down to three members now. Cause members like a young T.O., the boy, and Slimmy B. And out of the back, like, oh, okay, it's very usual, like West Coast Bay Area type of beat production. Although I will say it sounds like DJ Mustard, but it's not him, considering DJ Mustard's name is record label 10 Summers or Allen 10 Summers, but not this one. Like, it's just by one of the name young Echo Ant Peep. I cannot say his name. And Bylon. Bylon sounds better. But okay, anyway, track sounds fine. Like, I do recognize, you know, their flow and their cadence, because I recognize that they always do that thing like it's fine. And also in the video, Sister B from the Bay Area, and at the end, there's a wild appearance from E-40, which, okay, that kind of makes sense. I was like, okay, are they coming back? Are they doing a reunion tour? Are they reuniting or something? For the last? I mean, I don't know. The song is decent.
They're repping the wonderful industrial mess of a city that is Vallejo, and I can respect that.
I'll have to wait and see what all pans out from here. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. So, just because we're not discussing the MGK track in full depth, does not mean that this week is not trying to kill me with shitty music. Or that this year is trying to kill me with shitty music. The next roundup is going to be very fun.
I'm debating whether or not I should tell you about another potentially very bad album coming out. Depends on how high your tolerance for pain is.
Well, there's a certain EP that dropped recently. There's also that one emo shithead I ranted about that had something out this past month. Can it be worse?
I mean, are you familiar with Pat McAfee?
The fucking computer software guy?
No, the football guy.
No.
Oh. Well, next week, he's dropping an album.
I am not going to comment on that further.
Okay,
I already do with that information, whatever the hell you want to do with it.
Okay. Okay, I do a spit take, but it ain't worth it.
No, it's not worth it.
You know what else isn't worth it? The existence of Greta Van Fleet. Yep, they're back, people. They have a new album scheduled for October 9th, titled Palace for the People. And we have the latest single from the band here called Saw You Stand. Now, remember what I said with Frontier about bands that mainly only do one thing? This is the bad version of that. Because the one thing they do is just not good. As you can imagine, they're still in their, hey, look at how much we can crib from a 70s rock radio classics type of songwriting. You know, this being an overlong ballad at like 5 minutes, mainly characterized by pianos, guitar solos, and those always, always insufferable vocals. Not a single attempt at evolution in the slightest. Like, seriously, not even moving into the 80s at this point? God, that's pathetic.
Well, for this, the answer to how long I lasted before shutting this off was 1 minute and 15 seconds.
Damn.
That's all I could stomach. These fucking vocals will be the absolute death of me. Also, the production sounds way too overcompressed. Just everything is just peaking and it's just clipping and it's just too hot in the mix. It's too loud. Turn it down. Turn the faders down. Also, really? We're cribbing from Burt Bacharach, of all people? Also, I refuse to believe this band has a fan base outside of AI boomer slop shows on Facebook and wannabe hipsters who want music to sound, quote, real and authentic again, unquote.
Boy fucking howdy, this band. Just a cavalcade of nightmares. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. So, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard are dropping their newest album, Alien Metal, sometime this month. Actually, I haven't seen an actual proper date yet. I just know it's sometime in August. And we have the title track from that album, Alien Metal. And as you probably remember from the last single, this is supposed to be a techno record, and not in fact a weird psychedelic metal record. Why do they call it Alien Metal? Anyway. So, this song has a pretty consistent sense of momentum throughout. You can hear it in the bouncy groove of the drum patterns, just that constant driving tempo, the high-pitched synths that often, you know, bleep-bloop and, you know, make their presence known frequently. And there's even this kind of, at one point, this syncopated melody at a point in the song where it sort of sounds like they're trying to do, you know, sort of like their microtonal jazz stuff, but in the context of a, you know, a vaguely Mortal Kombat-sounding techno thing. And, of course, plenty of Stu McKenzie vocoder vocals in the mix to create that very weird, alien-sounding atmosphere. I like it. Long live this alien metal.
Well, it's sure different. I'll give him that, and I'll respect that artistic shift, even if I have zero investment and interest in it. I'll still respect it, though, just, you know, from afar, at a safe distance.
Where the aliens can't get to you.
Yeah, if I want to hear something about aliens, I'll just play Alien by Strapping on Lad instead.
That is a good option. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. This is also another August thing. Looks like we have another new single from Rhapsody.
Oh, yeah. So this new album, Gotta Afro Go Hoops, on August 21st. And this time, we have something a bit more soulful. A bit more soulful, which is called Apple Juice. And you're wondering why it's called Apple Juice. It's basically almost like a neo soul love song. Where the lyrics is like, I got Jones for you, sweet tooth. You're like the sugar in my apple juice. You peel them and hesitate. All this flirting we're doing, we need to exercise the way we feel. I want to feel this love pass this atmosphere. And it's like, okay. This is something that's smooth neo soul shit that they go like, okay. I see where she's going with this. It does something like D'Angelo or Angie Stone, someone along like that. Like, okay, like this, like Apple Juice and the song. This is kind of sweet. This is very sweet. And also, with a spoken word, gotta say, it's pretty good. Pretty good song.
Yep, dig the vibes here. Good stuff. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. Oh, hey, look, once again, this year is trying to kill me with shitty music. Hey there, President. I forgot, we're about a month out from your studio debut. So yeah, September 4th, President releasing their full-length Blood of Your Empire. And we have the latest single here, Dark Heaven, complete with a music video that has a bunch of alleged fan reactions, though I will say, I am not a fan of this. In fact, this set like a world record because this song literally pissed me off in 2 seconds. Because we go immediately from of 2 seconds worth of heavily detuned guitar chords, immediately swerving into this really bad mix of like synths and basically trap beats with some of the guitar stuff going on. And then getting into the verse proper, there's, like, bars. Like, really bad bars. This guy's doing more of this, bad trap flow thing before it swerves into that terrible pre-verse thing. Then you sort of get into the second verse where it's trying to do this mix of, like, offbeat chugs, the synths, and a lot of those kind of random jittery drum fills that I can only really describe it as sort of, like, a poppier Born of Osiris. Hell, once you get to the actual bridge of the song, the synth presence, like, increases a lot more, and of course the drum fills try to bang out more complex patterns, very much trying to be, like, a poppier take on that particular, like, prog metalcore style of, like, the 2010s, you know, like, Born of Osiris, North Lane, Era, etc., which, you know, I've heard stuff from those bands. They have some decent stuff, and, you know, it might have sounded cool if it was any other fucking band, but coming from this lame-brained, masked, really terrible pop metalcore bullshit, yeah, it's just not cutting it, and, once again, still waiting for this presidential impeachment.
Oh, boy, this really is just, we have Sleep Token at Home, the song, isn't it? If you just switch the attempt at sounding like Ollie Sykes, the harsh screams of Vessel, this really would be a Sleep Token song. Instead, it's just a thinly veiled imitation of one. Like, I'm souring super hard. I gave them a fair chance. This is just not cutting it. We're seeping further and further down into Octane Core territory, and that is a pit of despair you can never come back from.
God, yeah, like, You know, I keep forgetting that the very first time we ever brought this band up, you were the one that was, like, mildly positive on it, and now I'm like, yes, you see my viewpoint.
I'm not at the level of pure hatred you are. I'm just more along the lines of apathy and indifference. Like, I can just forget about this and go on with my day, no problem.
Aw, but bitching is fun!
In small doses.
Fair enough, I can do all the bitching necessary. Again, next album roundup is gonna have a lot of that. But, let's move on. So, we have, for this next song, a solo album courtesy of guitarist Tom Morello. In fact, I believe this might actually be his first solo album? At least that's what a lot of the press sounded like it was saying. You know, it's kind of funny and interesting because Tom Morello's solo album before a Zach De La Rocha solo album. We've never forgotten, people.
Waiting! It's been 10 years, guys.
Possibly. Yeah, 10 years. And, well, we had two Tom Morello albums. One to be in Man, the other I talked about being not that great.
Okay, so I was wrong. He had more solo stuff already.
Sorry, go ahead.
No worries. So Tom Morello's new solo album, Everyone Gets Everything They Want, is coming out September 25th. And first of all, I'm curious, because I think there was like a list of guest features, but I didn't exactly see... here we are. So, yeah, this is going to have a lot of guest contributions from the likes of Serge Tankian, of course, Kneecap, and even Beartooth. Interesting. And so we have this lead-off single here called Date Night. And it's kind of interesting that this isn't exactly the kind of experimental fare that characterizes his usual guitar playing that most people know him for. Quite the... It's a lot more straightforward. It's a more driving, energetic sort of radio hard rock banger, you know, perfectly suited just for like fist pumping and like, fuck yeah. And lyrically, this song is, it's fuck Nazis hours, of course. In fact, almost quite literally, because apparently this is about referring to real life events about like this trio of Dutch women in World War II who would seduce Nazis and then lure them out into the woods and kill them. The type of thing that I believe most people would call based. I'm not taking one for the team, like, God. But the important thing is it led to dead Nazis, so I can applaud that. Cool lyrics, solid music. I wonder how longtime Tom Morello fans are going to feel about this being more, again, very much straightforward, like, fist-pumping hard rock.
The message of killing Nazis is one I can absolutely get behind, especially if it's in brutal fashion. That being said, I think the song is just okay and all right. Like, I don't know. This just sounds kind of straight down the middle contemporary in terms of the arrangement and composition.
Yeah, that might be a make or break thing for most people. Anyway, moving on to the next track here. So, here's a new artist that I'm choosing to throw into the rotation because, well, I did actually listen to them a while back, and to prove that we're hip and relevant with the times. So, have y'all heard about this Slater? For those that are, you know, behind, Slater is a dance-pop/hyper-pop singer who's been making the rounds the past few years for her particular brand of, you know, very saturated, in-your-face, trashy, party girl music. Especially this year with her new album, Worst Girl in America. If you need a good index for her sound, she's done touring with the likes of Kesha and Charlie XCX. So think kind of somewhere in that, orbit, as it were. Anyway, as she's getting ready for her Worst Girl in America tour, she might actually already be in the middle of it, I forgot to double check, but anyway, she's released a new single here called Brand New Chanels, with a dollar sign. And funnily enough, you know, I say a lot about this being, like, very, like, trashy as kind of, like, a part of her brand. This is actually one of the more, like, marketable, tasteful songs, I would say. I mean, this isn't exactly, you know, I like having trashy sex for fun. More so, this is kind of more like this sort of 2010s pop jam about discovering that her partner is cheating on her. And, you know, she's kind of going through the expected mix of emotions, like sorrow, loneliness, an appropriate level of bitterness at everything. And it is a pretty solid pop jam for what it is. Kind of a bit of a detour from her usual stuff. I almost want to say it's like a way, way better version of prime-era Katy Perry. But maybe I'm just mixing up pop references here. Either way, I'm into this.
I'm not that familiar about the lore here, but this is still a pretty alright pop jam. I'll say that much.
Alright, and then that leaves us to the final track here on the list. So, here's a fun pairing. Apparently a while back at Coachella, Nina Jirachi and Porter Robinson had performed and released a track together. And now we have the actual, you know, proper studio version of that track called Wanna Cry. Now, of course, we've spoken in various capacities about these two particular artists, so you can probably imagine this song sounds exactly how you think it would if you're familiar with either of their works. Like, you know, it has a lot of the expected energetic, you know, electronic vibes that you would expect from Nina Jirachi, the particular melodic focuses that you get from, like, you know, Porter Robinson and such. Their styles, you know, obviously fuse together pretty well, especially with Robinson and kind of his hyper-pop leanings from sort of like some of his more recent work and everything. And, you know, overall, it does make for a pretty fun electronic banger.
Ah, finally. The Y2K core hyper-pop dance jam we've all been waiting for. Once again, quoting from the YouTube comments, this is like the World Cup for people with Evangelion posters on their walls.
Hey!
Yeah. Oh, okay. Also, I did not know that. Maybe just me. I forgot that her name, Jirachi, kind of her name in a Pokemon, Jirachi.
Uh huh.
But they're like, oh, okay. So that's where she got that from. And the song itself, that's kind of nice. It's very much, you know, in a very EDM hyper pop feel sound to it. And of course, Porter Robinson singing, which I'm guessing that's him singing, since I know he usually, you know, does something with his vocals that make him sound like that's not, you know, that's, you know, gotta have over, feminine voice, well, female voice or something like that. But yeah, it all sounds good.
Yep, hear, hear. And that'll about do it for the new song discussion. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and then when we come back, we have quite a bit of news. So, stay tuned.
Oh, boy!
And we're back. So we actually have a good amount of news to discuss here, like four topics in all, and they have some pretty interesting stuff going on. So for this first one here, I think I could best sum this up by borrowing a quote I once heard from a YouTuber I used to follow. TV is weird. What kind of TV, you might be wondering? Well, you might remember a little show called Dexter back in the day. You know, Dexter, adapted from a series of novels about a serial killer who works as a blood splatter analyst in Miami. And as a guy who actually lives in Miami, I'm like 100% sure they didn't actually film that show in Miami. But that's a different set of complaints. Now, Dexter was kind of infamous in its day. I mean, it was very acclaimed for a lot of its run. You know, kind of one of those anti-hero shows up there with, like, Breaking Bad as some of the must-watch dramas of their time. But we still remember Breaking Bad these days fondly because it managed to, you know, actually pull off its finale pretty well. Whereas Dexter, the original run, is very well known for shitting the bed royally, faking his death and becoming a lumberjack. God, I remember watching that live and just being like, the fuck? Again, mind, this is like my freshman year of college. But apparently, Dexter will not stay dead for long. Which is a weird way of phrasing that, because there's been a lot of Dexter revival stuff happening lately. So, it started back in, let me see, 2021 with a limited, you know, miniseries called Dexter New Blood. You know, taking place 10 years after that finale, and taking place in upstate New York, where his past is catching up to him. And then, in 2024, there was a prequel series called Dexter Original Sin, unsurprisingly. And now, we're on a brand new sequel series called Dexter Resurrection. That premiered, you know, last year on Paramount Plus with Showtime, and is apparently going to be airing a second season. So, yeah, there's a... If I wanted to catch up with it, I would have a lot, but I'm wondering if I even really want to. This just kind of seems like, I don't know, I feel like it, even though it sucks that you screwed up the finale, you should probably just take the L and move on. But nothing ever really truly ends anymore. So we're bringing this up because apparently this new season, which is airing at some point later this year, will in fact feature an acting role courtesy of System of a Down bassist Shavo Odadajan, courtesy of some released publicity photos that show Michael C. Hall just kind of staring the guy down as he's tied up to a pillar in cellophane in that good old Dexter fashion. According to the description here, Odadajan's character, R.H. Martin, is about to experience the wrath of vigilante serial killer Michael C. Hall. And apparently the executive producer of the show had also worked as the director on the famous Chop Suey music video. So, interesting full circle moment there.
I remember this guy being a music director back in the day. Marco Siga. I hope I said it right. I've never seen his name in a bunch of video, in a bunch of music videos before.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I can just tell you a couple of videos he's done. Let's see, what can we find here scrolling through Wikipedia? Crystal Method, Name of the Game, that's a good one. Nice. System of a Down, Chop Suey, and Toxicity. What else do we have? Let's see. Seven Dust, Waffle, okay. Quicksand. Delusional and Thorn in My Side. Papa Roach, Last Resort, that video, okay. Let's see, what else is there? Everyone's favorite Alien Ant Farm song. Sing along, everybody! And just like the movies! Well, that was one hell of a setup, and I am very happy I got to do it.
We're never letting this joke die, people. Oh, God, it never stops being funny. But, yeah, so, who knows? Maybe Shavo... I mean, I'm sure Shavo probably had fun filming this. Also, funnily enough, this wouldn't be the first time Dexter has ever been associated with anything metal-related, because every time I think about the show, one of the first things I think about is an Instagram post from Lamb of God singer Randy Blythe, where he mentions just the story where, like, someone came up to him and was like, hey, so I got a buddy of mine, his name is Michael, he's an actor, he's a really big fan and he wanted to take a picture. It's like, oh, okay, I don't really watch a lot of TV, but sure. And then just kind of this whole story is like, oh, wait, you're a serial killer. And I actually wonder how long ago that was, but yeah, it is, I thought it was a pretty amusing story of those two. Actually, now that I think about it, I wonder if this was in part Michael C. Hall's decision. Apparently, he does listen to quite a bit of metal music from what I've heard. But, you know, it is what it is, so maybe I'll catch some of this. Maybe. But
yeah, I mean, yeah, it's been a long time since I mean, like I said, I did watch that Weeb one time, but I sort of fell off, to be honest. And I mean, if I heard from the other season, but I heard some mixed good things about. I mean, I heard a thing about a reveal of a certain character that they want revenge, but let's not get into that.
Yeah, so let's move on to the next topic here. So, a while back, we had mentioned like something about a new Ministry song, and I had alluded to a quote from one of the more recent Ministry albums. Well, like a decade plus ago, but there was a song that opened with this monologue about, you know, profiting off dead musicians, saying, quote, "Son, you're worth more dead than alive, because when you're dead, we could sell you off in pieces." And sadly, there's been nothing more seemingly true about that than the past year or so after the passing of metal icon Ozzy Osbourne. Yeah, there's just been a lot of stuff that's been coming out from the rest of the Osbourne family that is not a good look. It just kind of seems like, well, at the very least, his fuck-ass son was waiting and salivating at the opportunity to start profiting off the image of a dead legend. Granted, I don't know if this particular thing was the idea of a Jack, but considering some of his interesting opinions about things, I wouldn't be surprised if he had some talks in it.
I think this is less of a Jack decision and more of a Sharon decision, or rather, Sharon decision.
Never gets old. So, yeah, by the way, fun fact, despite the fact that I've been born and raised in Miami and have been to Orlando a great many deal of times in my life, I've never actually been to Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights. I know, surprising, isn't it? And I bring this up because the topic du jour here is that this year's edition of Halloween Horror Nights, both in Florida and California, will feature an experience titled Ozzy Osbourne, Prince of Darkness. It'll be one of the themed haunted houses that they start setting up. It's going to open August 28th in the Orlando Park and September 3rd in Hollywood, California. According to this consequence piece from Langdon Hickman, the house will depict iconic imagery from albums such as Blizzard of Oz, Diary of a Madman, Bark at the Moon, No More Tears, and Ordinary Man. There's a statement here, Sharon and Jack Osbourne. So, hey, look at that, it's both of them. Ozzy never stopped pushing boundaries, and he loved anything that gave fans a new way to experience his music and the worlds he created. Halloween Horror Nights has done an incredible job bringing that spirit to life. Walking through these haunted houses, you'll recognize so many moments inspired by his music and imagination. It's a wonderful tribute to Ozzy, and we hope fans have as much fun experiencing it as he would have had seeing it come together. Yeah, so there's also merchandise and tie-ins and such. And down here, you can also see a list of other projects that Sharon is apparently green-lighting in the wake of Ozzy's passing, such as an AI-driven digital avatar. Yay!
Oh, no.
Yeah, I definitely heard some rumblings of AI resurrections here. God, the Tupac hologram really was a warning, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that in particular. See, the thing is, I really do want to go to a Halloween Horror Nights at some point. Yeah, maybe it might not be the classic years with a lot of original lore and such, but I don't know, something about this, like, I imagine if I do go, I'm probably going to not go to this particular house. Maybe I'll go to one of the other ones. So, for reference, some of the other stuff that's going on this year, like themed houses and attractions, you have the likes of course, Hellraiser. Heh. The new Evil Dead movie, Evil Dead Burn. Stranger Things, unsurprisingly. The Purge, and even a Sinner's experience for the event. So, you know, the Sinner's house might be fun at the very least. Although, nothing will beat last year when frickin' Universal in California was the place that got the 4D Chainsaw Man movie. I want that here. I want to watch the Halloween Horror Nights devil get his ass beat. So, yeah. There's your Aussie news. Oh, God, it just leaves a sour taste in my mouth.
Yep. Well, better have a lot be a, a lot more sour shit going on.
Yeah. Anyway, segue. Next topic. Oh, hey, look. Remember when we talked about the Grammys rule changes? And we were like, oh, man, there's gonna be some fuck-ass bullshit resulting from this. And here's the fuck-ass bullshit resulting from this.
Right on time.
So, we've gotten the announcement this past week that the Korean pop group BTS have announced that they'll sit out the 2027 Grammy Awards, choosing not to submit their big comeback album, Arirang, for any category. Now, this wouldn't be the first time they've had any sort of spat with the Grammys. It's kind of a recurring thing with them. They haven't won any awards despite multiple nominations for songs like Dynamite, Butter, that Coldplay song. And they've downplayed the importance of Grammys recognitions before. But in this case, per their own words, "We have decided not to submit an entry for Grammy consideration this year. We hope music can be heard and loved for what it is, rather than being divided into region or language." Which pretty much all but says that this is them being pissed off about the inclusion of an Asian pop music category that they see as just existing to partition Asian language music off from consideration for any of the regular awards. And someone who saw many opinions and quite a bit of discourse about this, you would not be surprised to learn that people were floating that one Tyler, the Creator clip all over in response to this. You know the one.
It does seem like, you know, that thing where it's like, well, we can let you have the year, but we have your own little category. Here you go with your little other, you know, with other K-pop, J-pop friends over there, like, J-pop, I'm Korean, motherfucker. I'm Indonesian. I'm Malaysian. Wait, Indonesian hat pop? I don't know. But let's say, here you go. We'll put you right here, in here, in here. It's like, you know, I mean, we don't always do this shit, but it's like, you know, here's this category for this sort of genre of music, because I'm going to put the motherfuckers on the big ones, unless they're really big. So here you go. Here's a small little table. Here you guys enjoy. Get some ribs.
Oh, man, now I want ribs.
You know, this shouldn't have to be said, but apparently it has to be said. Separate but equal is not actually equal, Grammys.
Oh, boy. Yeah. You think they would learn by this point?
Grammys are good.
You would
Grammys
think.
Yeah, Grammys are good at Grammy.
Yep, that sounds about right. I mean, right.
How many times do we have to teach you this lesson, Harvey Mason?
I still remember because most people say Albany year winners have been, you know, basically, you know, not your usual white people. I mean, this year you had Bad Bunny, good. Last year you had Beyonce, also good. And now it's like, are you trying to say, well, we can't have more than them people winning awards. We gotta put them in the category so that way they get the award and we get all awards. Like, the fuck? You mean the shit you've been doing for lots of years? Which, yeah.
Yeah, so this is gonna be a particularly contentious award ceremony. I could just feel it in my bones.
Good luck, ABC. You're on the foot for it now.
Am I? Oh yeah, that's why it's like, this is your problem now. What? Yeah, you doing this shit. Well, we at CBS are fucked anyway.
They don't care either way.
Well, we'll see what happens when February rolls around. But you're probably going to lose out a good bit of ratings, because, you know, BTS comeback album, I feel like that probably would have been worth quite a bit of hype. Hell, we literally talked, like, I think it was like just last week or the week before, about how the new BTS album was driving a major uptick in physical CD sales.
Yeah, despite people saying the album was not that good from what I heard.
There are too many problematic producers on that album, as we've alluded to.
Oh, fuck. I mean,
Diplo should be in prison.
Oh, that's right. Oh, for that motherfucker. Also, I think I saw Mike Romanes is in there. Like, what the fuck's he doing here?
Yeah. Apparently, the Korean pop music industry was lucrative enough for Mike Romanes to go and say, hey, give me some of that. And I don't blame him. Get the bag. Go ahead.
Yeah.
But again, my main point still stands. Diplo should be in prison for many things.
The good old problematic. Yeah. Just shove them all in there and never let them out. But moving on from that to the final bit of news here. What the hell is going on in the camp of Slipknot? So, this year, Slipknot... Well, there was one major event, at least, a while back, with the actual proper release of the long-rumored, long-sequestered, hidden-away album Look Outside Your Window. And now there's a bit of a flare-up on the internet as, well, according to TMZ, allegedly DJ and keyboardist Sid Wilson has been permanently removed from the lineup after a 28-year stint with the band. But it didn't stop there, as the exact same day this news came out, guitarist Jim Root shared a cryptic post to Instagram stories set to a 2008 song, Till We Die, saying, quote, "Don't believe everything you read. Stop, think, take a breath, sit with it for a while, maybe, just maybe even wait until there's more information." Now, there's been a lot of turbulence in Slipknot's camp as of late with, you know, being one of those bands that I think sold off the rights of their catalog for a major sum of money. Just altogether other lineup instabilities, like what happened with the, you know, drummer switch out and all. And so maybe you might be tempted to give some credence to maybe there's just some more internal chaos going on. But I do want to point out one thing here, that the main source for this information is TMZ. And what the fuck are you doing trusting TMZ in 2026? I thought we would all learn by now. When have they ever been a trustworthy source of information on anything for any reason other than accidentally stumbling ass backwards into a true statement?
I mean, they're arguably the most reputable news report outlet in Washington, D.C. right now, which is saying something.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's only because the standards are so low at this point, and
the bar is so deep in hell, we know, but there may be some smoke to this fire.
How do you figure? Because I haven't seen any of whatever the smoke might be. Again, TMZ's report says that they're citing, quote, "a source close to the band with direct knowledge of the situation," which is, you know, just the usual vague posting PR speak, in my opinion.
Fair, but given everything that's been going on with Slipknot over the last couple years, would it really be that surprising?
Yeah, that's kind of... Okay, so, to be fair, I did think about that for a second. This is kind of one of those situations where, like, have you ever heard, like, a statement that just kind of feels true regardless of whether or not you know off the top of your head that it actually is? It's sort of like when everyone was trying to blame Taco Bell for the diarrhea lettuce. Like, we found out it was bullshit, that it was the supplier Taylor Farms, but it's just one of those things that for the average person not paying that much attention sort of intuitively feels true, maybe, like, Taco Bell gives you diarrhea. You know, it's just one of those thought-terminating cliches you could say without having to put more thought into it.
And I still say, when we say that shit, your stomach is weak, your ass is weak, you're weak, your body is weak. Skill issue. There you go.
So, look, from everything I've seen about this whole situation, it could be one of many things. It could be behavioral issues. It could be drugs. It could be something else. There has to be something afoot if various other sources are, you know, aggregating this and, you know, trying to put the pieces together.
We'll see what happens, because, again, the only other thing that I've really seen come out of this is Sid Wilson himself making some kind of post about, I think it was like a personal merch store that he was opening up, either for himself or like his own musical projects, which is a weird thing to post in the aftermath of rumors like this. But we'll, again, I'm in Jim's camp here. I'm just like, wait and see until something more substantial comes out.
Yeah. My take on this whole thing is, considering all the weird nonsense that's been going on with this band for the last couple of years, it really wouldn't surprise me if this turned out to be legitimate. That's all I'm going to say. And to go back to the cold open, days without nonsense happening in the world, still zero.
You know what? To be fair, if it does turn out that this is all actually 100% true, I will listen to a Machine Gun Kelly album.
Oh boy.
I will swallow my words.
You don't have to torture yourself that hard.
Hey, I've already tortured myself enough this year. I listened to Lizzo. Why would I start having standards now? But it is what it is, so we'll see what else spins out from here. And, of course, that'll finish up the news topics, and that, of course, leaves just one more thing here before the sign-off, and that is the new album releases for the week of August 7th, 2026. Just a small few things here. So there's a new album from the band Cancer Bats with Give Me Dirt. We have the newest album from Electric Callboy with Tanznade. From the Mountain Goats, who is apparently a band, and not just those people that do really good shit posts on Blue Sky. They have a new album called Days. And, of course, we have the newest musical project from John Carpenter with Cathedral. Now it's time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, you know where to find all his stuff. It's in the description. Just look there if you so are interested. God, those are really weird mingling words. Anyway, Mark, what about you?
Also on Blue Sky, Metal Media, where I pop up now and then. I barely do shit. I barely do shit nowadays. Whatever. Also on my site, mind.com, where hopefully I actually have something coming soon if I'm not too lazy about it. Or I don't know. I don't know. It's been a rough couple of days, but yeah.
Fair enough. As for me, you can find me on Blue Sky, Instagram, etc. at Rob Barracuda. You can email me, robert@surrealresolution.com, for questions, comments, concerns, and inquiries. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Be sure to follow us on Blue Sky at surrealresolution.bluesky.social. Be sure to visit the website surrealresolution.com for written articles, this podcast, podcast, Q&A, all of that good stuff. And, of course, be sure to find a link to the Discord there as well, so you can always be immediately notified whenever new stuff goes up there. And just chat all sorts of things. I hear there's a Fire Emblem Direct tomorrow, so maybe you can also contribute to another 3 years of Three Houses discourse, as the meme goes. Or maybe you can continue to bitch and roast the fuck out of that Machine Gun Kelly song. I know I certainly will. Anyway, that'll about do it for this week. Hopefully we'll be back next week with more of the usual weekly business. And until then, the fuck do you mean the Reverend Horton Heat is still a thing in touring in 2026? Psychobilly freak out indeed.